Go ahead, Chris.
I want a raise.
His behind scenes hotel. Watch the fade. Oh, there's the fade, I love it! Gloucester Cast, 350 people!
350!
We did it, we got cake. Wait, I'm gonna show everybody the cake. Kim brought us a beautiful cake. Yeah. I love it.
How do I turn it off?
Turn it off! We are fresh. Chris and I are fresh. We have Chris McCarthy with us.
Good morning, Gloucester. Good morning, Joe. Happy birthday and happy 350.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Susan Lipson is with us.
Good morning, Gloucester.
And Kim Smith is with us.
Good morning, Gloucester.
Pat and Jimmy failed us.
Yeah. We were surprised not to see them.
MIA.
We're a little late this morning because we were waiting for them. Right. I was lollygagging, trying to buy more time because I was waiting for them to come.
To come.
Especially Pat and Jimmy usually bring me a coffee or something.
Have you mistreated them or something?
No, they have no allegiance to this podcast. I fully expect
that's
them.
That's so untrue.
I expect them to be on
They are the most
some,
loyal people to this podcast.
You don't know them.
Retract that comment, please.
Yeah, you just need to take that back right
do you
now.
Know what?
They don't deserve that.
No, because I fully expect to see them on some other platform.
You got your phone in your truck the other day when you forgot it at the Crow's Nest.
Yeah, Joe.
They do, like, everything for you.
Yeah.
It's time for you to appreciate people.
Yes,
more.
Joe.
I got my eyes on you, Jimmy Dalp. Yes. You can't escape. 350, this has been all the weekends of the summer. This has been the most jam packed week.
Yep.
We started out Niles Beach. We had dinner on the beach. We brought the little grill.
Thursday
night. We had the hibachi on the grill. Friday.
Fish tacos.
Blackened fish tacos.
Blackened fish tacos.
Outrageous on the cast iron skillet.
Haddock. Local haddock.
Yeah. From Conley's. They do a good job there. What else did we do? Then Friday, we went on the boat to Wingersheep. We saw a guy almost die.
I was working.
Oh, that's
right. You went on the boat.
I went on the boat, yeah.
You saw a guy almost die?
We saw a guy. Yeah. We don't know how. So we don't know. I really don't know how you don't hear of, like, at least if I witness what I witness on a normal Friday or Saturday at Wingersheep Beach on a normal, I would, if you told me this is what it normally is like, I would peg the deaths due to, like, not knowing how to operate a boat and not understanding how big of a current is there. I would pin it at 5 a year.
Wow.
It's amazing that
more people don't die.
So we're there.
Or at least get hurt, right?
Chris, tell them.
So what we think happened was there was a boater who dropped his anchor. It was low tide,
right?
And he dropped his anchor
in the
right
river,
in the
mouth
channel.
Of the Anisquam.
Mouth of the Anisquam, where the current, for those of you who've been out there, the current runs pretty quick there.
Right.
And he dropped an anchor, and he decided to jump off to cool himself down, and his girlfriend was still on the boat. What he didn't realize was the current was so strong that he couldn't get back to his boat.
He was swimming in place. Yeah. He wasn't swimming in place. He was swimming, and he was
going backwards while he was swimming.
And after about a half a minute, he decided to bail out on swimming. Now his boat is dragging the anchor, going sideways down the river. His girlfriend or wife doesn't know how to drive it.
Yeah.
He starts swimming for the beach.
Right.
He gets about 20 yards from the beach.
He's
screaming,
help.
Help me, help me.
He wasn't in very good shape.
Right.
So then
it didn't take a lot.
No. So then he gets about up to his knees.
Right.
You know, the guy drags him, guy swims out there.
Someone jumped in and actually grabbed him.
Actually saved him.
Oh.
He's up to his, he gets to, up to his knees. He just collapses in the water because he's so exhausted.
Yeah, but swimming against the current for even half a minute is really
cool.
Well, then you're kind of freaking out,
right.
So you're burning a lot of whatever.
So the guy who saved him knew what he was doing. He was pretty athletic.
He
actually jumped in to get the drifting boat because his girlfriend was on the boat,
right.
And he played it right. He went out and let the boat meet him, and he jumped on the back, and then he started it up.
Oh, The same guy who saved him?
Yes. No. Yeah.
Also saved the boat.
Saved the boat.
Wow.
And he, I mean, Joe was just sitting there watching all this.
I'm not very strong.
He didn't even get up. To do anything.
If you jump in.
Well, we didn't realize this guy was in distress.
What's that?
He didn't even need to refill his drink during.
I think he got up once to put a new beer in his Yeti.
We didn't realize he was in distress until he started screaming for help.
Yeah, for help.
And
also,
if you're not a strong swimmer and you go out to save somebody, you're going to be.
They say that's the number one.
That's what Russ was saying. Russ was saying that that's the worst thing you could do is jump in after someone who's in distress.
Especially if you don't have.
Because they're going to pull you down.
Yeah.
Well, could you call someone on your phone?
We probably could have, but by the time they got there.
It happened so fast.
Yeah. But the funny part of the story is the guy who almost drowned got back onto his boat, started pulling out, and we're all yelling to him because his line is still hanging on the back of his boat.
It hasn't even pulled it up yet.
We thought it was going to get stuck in the prop. Right. So he put his engine in neutral, and he's pulling up his anchor. It was a 5-pound weight.
No, it was like
it wasn't even an anchor.
It was a mushroom ball kind of.
It was a mushroom ball.
It was the size of this. It was the size of that.
It wasn't an anchor with teeth. It was just this weight.
This guy's like totally clueless about everything.
But I don't think he's the only one that does that.
Yeah.
I really don't.
It was classic.
No, I mean, sometimes when I'm at a restaurant and you see people, they've been drinking all afternoon, and then they get on their boats.
Yeah.
And drive, I mean, I just think.
Or in their cars.
Yeah.
I don't even know if this
guy was drinking. I mean,
I'm not sure, to be honest.
I think it was just.
By the time he got to the beach and he collapsed, I don't know if he was collapsed from what. It was exhaustion,
I think.
Yeah.
He was embarrassed, too.
Yeah. It was very embarrassing.
But, for those of you who have a boat.
All the people on Wingersheek are probably just watching all this unfold.
Yeah. Well, it was a Friday, so it wasn't as crowded as it usually is.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh, it's crazy there on a Saturday.
Oh, it was crazy. But it was beautiful. We had a perfect spot. There's a light breeze. Greenheads weren't that bad.
Yeah.
They were worse on the boat as we were heading home. They were like swarming us. They were all under my bimini.
Right.
I had at least 5 of them just sitting on my bimini underneath.
When do the greenheads stop? Like the second week in August?
I don't know.
But speaking of the greenheads, so there's been greenheads. The last couple of weeks, the greenheads have been out.
I think they're extra bad this year because we've had so much rain.
Oh, is that right? Is that right?
Oh, really? They're like
mosquitoes. So we did discover that off, like, insect repellent works.
It really does work.
The spray.
Well, the only reason it works is because I was driving. Whenever Joe saw one on me, he would spray it directly on the greenhead. Of course, it's going to be effective when you spray it directly on the greenhead.
I sprayed myself. I didn't get bit once. And they were buzzing around the whole time. They were landing on his. They were landing like, you know where they always go for?
Yeah.
Like the behind your knee.
Yeah.
All that soft meat. They go for the soft meat.
Your scrotox. He had one.
That wasn't.
He had one go up his shorts.
That was before I sprayed myself. So one, I had loose, you know, like swim trunks. One went up and got me right in the nuts.
Oh my God.
It was horrible.
Yeah.
And they swelled up.
No, they didn't.
They didn't swell up.
Elephantitis. No, that's just normal.
Did you look at them, Chris?
He said, that's what a friend does.
Chris, take a peek.
I had to suck the venom out.
Stop. I can only imagine what Paul Ryan O'Brien is saying right now. No, she's probably not on either because she's part of that Jimmy Dalpiaz, Pat Dalpiaz group. Yeah. Sons of bitches.
With it behind us, I can't read the comments. Sorry.
Oh, yeah, the comments.
Oh.
I think I can open up.
Tell me not to touch anything.
No, don't touch anything. Oh, you can look for
any comments.
Paul Ryan O'Brien says, good morning, Gloucester. I guess she's still speaking.
Oh, she is. She's in. She's still in the good graces. Paul Ryan O'Brien's still in the good graces. Tell her that Jimmy and Pat are dead to me right now.
No, I'm not going to do that because I think you are just being awful.
Okay.
They're just so loyal and kind to you, and I don't appreciate it.
So the next big thing of the weekend was Bluefin Blowout.
Yeah.
We went to the Bluefin
That's
Blowout.
That's a highlight of the summer for us. We love it.
Yeah, it's great.
It's a highlight for a lot of people. And that thing, so if you look at the trajectory of that tournament, like the participation and the people that go there and everything and the money that they're raising. It's like a sky. It's like the curve is, it's going like this.
Right, it's tremendous.
It is tremendous.
Did you see how much the winners got?
Yeah.
$62,000.
Over 62.
I'm getting into fishing.
And the car for a year.
And the car for a year. And that doesn't include if they entered the Calcutta. Which is
the side bets.
The side bets between the captains.
Right.
Most of those big tournaments have a Calcutta.
Why do they call it Calcutta?
I don't know, but it's a name.
Did this start in India?
I don't know.
It's a good question.
Yeah. Why don't you look it up?
We will let everyone know next week what a Calcutta is.
Say Calcutta. Say, say,
I'll do it later.
And it's for like a sail fishing tournament.
I'll do it before I punch
out.
Well,
no, it's not just for fishing tournaments. They do it
They're doing golf too, right?
Yeah, so Calcutta is a term,
so
a betting term.
Calcutta for tournaments. That's what we're looking to see.
Yeah, I'm just looking what they call. I'll research it before I punch out today. Don't worry, you'll be pretty much punch out
there. So,
punch Joe out?
No, punch the clock.
So I always, we talk about this ahead of time all the time. The vendors at the Bluefin Blowout for me are kind of a highlight because they always have the Bluefin,
really nice stuff.
The Bluefin Blowout themselves always has awesome merch, like quality super soft sweatshirts and hoodies and technical shirts.
I got a nice shirt.
We spent a bunch of money but there was this one little pop-up thing, and they were from, I want to say they were from the Cape, ThatcherEllery.com.
oh yeah, they had nice knickknacks.
They had really, and their website, they have some things on their website that I'd like to get for the house. Some really cool, I'm very judicious about what I bring in for glassware into the house because I hate having a ton of mismatched glassware, but they had these really cool
modeling
cups.
That could actually be very chic to have mismatched.
Yeah,
but you have to go either all in or not because halfway it's a mess. And I got this vintage brass cigar ashtray.
It's a compass.
It has a compass on the top and a working man at the wheel steering wheel.
Oh, how
very
awesome.
Cool.
What was this, Joe?
Are you going to put the link up to that?
Our fish at that auction. And part of it is that's a big holiday week in Japan. The New Year's week is a big deal. And it has a lot to do with the ceremony of the auction that's held that week.
Yeah.
So it's hundreds or even thousands of dollars a pound.
Did you talk about a tuna that they overbid for?
Well,
to have
to
have
he's
going
to buy a tuna in Japan and bring it over to have it in his boat and cheat in the tournament next year. And I'm just trying to explain to him how much he might have to pay.
Right.
No, but I'm going to buy a runner.
For a whole fish if he buys it in Tokyo.
So
I'm going to buy a runner instead, Joe. Explain what a runner is.
Yeah,
tuna
that's
runner.
An interesting story. I didn't know about
so
that.
So speaking of the Bluefin Blowout, because I just started up the audio part. So Susan earlier, before we were talking, was speaking about the high prices of money that they pay for tuna on the auctions in Japan. And that's true some times of the year when there's obviously supply and demand, but there's also something that plays a huge role in the price that they pay for tuna. And in Japan, a lot, they want fattiest tuna that they can get.
Right.
So they want it toro. They want it to be super greasy. That like the thing in the American consumer generally wants more kind of leaner tuna, and they end up saturating it with soy and masking it with all kinds of flavors. Over in Japan, they want fatty. Right now in the United States, in the Northeast United States, the fish that these guys are catching are considered what's called runners. They've been flying up here from the south, and using a lot of their fat, burning it off,
getting up here.
For the next couple of months through December, they're basically going to just circle around in the
Gulf of Maine.
And they're just going to chow on pogies and chow on herring and chow on stripers, and really just fatten up and fatten up and fatten up for the trip back down south.
Yeah.
When they migrate back down.
Hmm.
So
that's so interesting.
So
that goes with what Susan was just saying, because the
New Year's
so is the first big auction in Japan, and that's when they pay like
big
so that
okay
so
here's
so
the deal
super
this
fat.
Past January, the first auction of the year,
yep.
at the new fish market in Tokyo, you know, they closed down Tsukiji because it was just not big enough. And I was at the old Tsukiji in 2018, and that place is just packed. So they opened a new fish market in an old industrial building. It's now called the Toyosu Fish Market. This January, the same guy who owns this chain of sushi restaurants over there set a new record for one single fish. Who wants to guess how much he paid for a 612-pound tuna?
$1 million.
Stop it. $3.1 million.
Wow.
Do you know what that comes out to per pound?
How much?
$5,065.36.
Incredible. So, so along those lines, I know when I went to Dallas, Texas to visit my friend, they have cattle auctions.
Yeah.
And there's a certain cattle auction where the big, huge steakhouses overpay for the, like, there'll be one big auction for, like, the prize steer.
Right.
And they will, I'm not sure what the number on that one is, but I know it's some outrageous number that they bid because they want to be known at, they use it in their marketing as buying the highest quality steer. So
wow.
It's this big thing of,
interesting.
Like, I can't imagine.
That was actually cut in northern Japan.
I figured it out. I'm going to buy that particular fish.
From Mr. Kimura?
Yes. Put it on my boat, get it weighed in, take the money, and I'm going to sell it back to him. So there's
Japanese
no cost to me.
Japanese value freshness in their tuna.
I will keep it
as
fresh.
As much as they value the fattiness.
I'm going to keep
they,
it fresh.
Don't they
everything fresh, has to be super fresh.
Don't
there.
They flash freeze it or something? Don't they freeze it immediately?
I don't think they do.
I
think they ice it down and put it on that.
I thought that made the fish
ANA
jet. Sushi. Anyways.
My daughter goes shopping for fish in the local market near where she lives in Yokohama.
Yeah.
This is how they price the fish. When they open in the morning, you got your little filet or steak, fish steak, it has the price on it. Every 2 hours, they go around and mark down the price tags on all the pieces of fish.
Wow,
every 2 hours, the Japanese value freshness in like a crazy way.
Huh.
Yeah, I certainly like fresh food, but they are just all about it.
If it's not fresh, it's not
legal. Well, it's a game of chicken as well.
If it's not fresh, it's not legal.
No, it's a game of fish, Joe.
But it's a game. Right, I like the pun, but it is also a game of chicken because as the prices drop, you have people gaming.
It's kind of like how Filene's Basement used to work.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Wait a few more days, maybe I'll get these shoes for less.
I didn't
but
know.
You're taking a risk.
I didn't know it was based on freshness. I thought it was based on the number of flies that sit on it.
Nope, no flies.
No flies?
No flies there. You can't believe how clean that whole country
really?
Is. Oh my gosh.
I'm sure.
Okay, you can eat off the ground.
So they raised they raised over $320,000
more than double last year's total.
More than double
that's,
last year's total that they raised.
That's
to
double
that
it like
is
that?
My hat's off to all those people.
Well,
they're
going to be at $1 million pretty soon.
Oh, nice.
Wow.
It was so well organized. So this year they didn't have the cornhole tournament in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Last year they had
that's an improvement in my opinion.
It's a 100% an improvement because the cornhole people took up the entire inside of the big
I
tent.
That.
You could hardly get to the bar.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, that was the most delicious drink.
Oh,
at
yeah.
At the Tito's booth.
Yeah.
I took a picture of it. It was called the Big Bluefin, I believe.
Yeah.
What's in it?
And I'll tell you what's in it.
Blue Curacao.
Tito's handmade vodka.
Right.
Lemonade and blue Curacao.
Yeah.
Oh, how pretty.
Yeah.
So it was the color. It was blue, like the tuna and the color of the ocean. And that was a very sippable drink. It was delicious.
What is it? What's
well, yellow
blue
is
curacao?
Not there.
What
it's
is
kind
that?
Of
what,
a...
What does that taste like?
You would find it.
It's
blue.
Blue
Curacao tastes like orange.
It is an orange.
A little bit
flavor.
Of an
yeah.
orange taste.
You'd see
the liquor
like
is
tiki.
Actually just called Curacao by the people who make it, but
okay.
Everyone calls it blue
Curacao. Okay.
In,
here I have all the weights on the fish.
So is it like?
Oh, cool. You want to read them off?
Yeah, I'll tell you. Okay. Ready?
Yep.
406, 385. Oh, no, that's
you
last
say
year's. Sorry.
You say the names?
That's last year's. So wait a minute. Okay, I got it here.
Difficulty.
Yeah, I can say the names. You want me to?
Name and the weight. Yep.
All right. We've got
Chris
the
McCarthy.
Fair Warning, 297. The Frigate, 307.
That's Nicole Schraff's husband, Freddie.
Oh, great. Yeah. I saw her there doing great pictures. The Gypsy, 354. This was the first fish. I was there when they brought this one in. The Karen Lynn, 186. So I asked Nicole what if there was a lower limit on the weight, you know, for a legal fish. And she said, no, it's a length
side, yeah.
And she's 73 inches, she told me.
Yeah.
Huh. She's a fountain of information.
She knows her stuff.
The Kellyanne, 346. The Lady J, 298.
Oh, Dave Jewell caught one. I didn't know he had one.
Wow.
That's Dave Jewell. Two of our lobster boats caught fish.
Yep, so far, I haven't finished. We've got the Lady M, 500. I guess that was the second biggest fish.
Yeah.
The Lion's Den, 410. Painkiller got two fish, 432 and 368.
Oh,
wow.
Real Easy, the winner, congratulations to them, 560 pounds. Shark Bait, 358. Tono, 260, the second day.
Anthony.
And Tuna Taxi, I like the almost alliterative sound of that, 304. So it seems to me like not only the biggest one, but maybe the average was a little bit lower than last year.
Yeah.
But lots of fish were caught, and they were beautiful looking fish I saw.
A lot of them.
So I bought a
50-50 ticket for the raffle, $10 ticket.
Half to the winner, half to the good cause. Right.
Yeah, half to the winner, half to the good cause. But when I put my it was based on closest to the biggest fish. What number?
Yeah.
So I guessed the number of what I bought my ticket early on Sunday, and I based it off of what the previous day's biggest fish was. So I was already in the running.
Oh, that's smart. Right.
Right. And I wrote on the ticket, if I win, I want the money to go directly to the charity.
You don't want your 50.
I don't want my 50. I want it to go into.
Well, he's directing it.
Yeah.
To the organization.
So they got my half of the money, which I'm really happy about.
I'd like to know
how
much it was,
though.
I
would too.
I'd like to know if they're going to send you a 1099. You need to find that out.
Let's not. We don't even have to bring that up. Probably. Make sure we say it five or six more times.
Come January, Joe will say, why didn't you tell me I was going to get this 1099? You know how it works.
Say it five or six more times.
I will.
Okay. There you go. Yeah,
I thought there were going to be a lot more fish. I was surprised because
that's a decent amount of fish. There's 63 boats.
Did you see how many they caught last year with fewer boats?
You want to know what I noted about it was how gorgeous the boats were. Duck soup.
Duck soup. I took a picture of duck soup.
Oh,
the back.
Oh my God!
The game of rods.
Wow. Yeah.
I posted something. He had a chair in the back of his boat with at least 8 rods around it.
Wow.
And, I mean, this thing,
it
was
so beautiful.
One of them
was going to catch something, right?
He didn't catch anything.
Oh.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, most of them, Joe, what's typical of the number of lines they throw in the water when they're fishing?
You know something? I'm not exactly sure. I don't know, because honestly, I've never gone. My guess would be 4.
Yes.
But I mean, a big boat like that that has a huge tower, they could do 4 on each corner in the back, and then they have the tower, and then they could have
probably depends on the size of the
boat. Okay, here are the numbers. Last year, I'm looking at a photograph of that blackboard where they tally them up, 16 fish were caught. This year, I'm counting 14 fish.
Oh, well, that's not that much.
Last year, there were, 50 boats? And this year, there were
65.
63.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very good. That was a great take.
Yeah, 14 fish total.
So Chris and I...
Where are they selling these fish? These runners? I know Tono always has them, and we eat there and order that frequently, and it is beyond delicious.
Mm.
Where else... Since some people just
want to buy a piece
of fish...
You can't buy it right
there.
And
sear it up at home. Where would they go to buy bluefin?
Around here?
Yeah.
I'm sure that... Conley's has it. I'm sure that Turner Seafood has it.
I go to Conley's a lot. Last summer I saw bluefin for sale there exactly one time.
Hmm.
Well, was it before the season or after the season?
I bet Nicole,
it was this time of year.
Maybe Nicole would know where you could purchase it.
I'd be surprised if you couldn't get it at Conley's. But if you can't get it at Conley's, I know you could probably get it at Turner Seafoods.
And if that was something
that's
you were
good.
Looking
that's
for,
good
I would,
information to put out
yeah,
there.
I would ask Conley's if it's not out, maybe they have some in the back.
Hmm.
that's being sent to like restaurants.
Yeah.
That you, they might.
Write. I'd be shocked.
It's worth the ask.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great. That's a good idea.
So it's not like you just have to know someone and call up their brother-in-law who caught one, or.
No, but I mean, right now there's so many fish being caught that if you went to the place where they buy them, like, you could probably get some fish.
Okay.
You know, I just wanted to add about the cornhole, so we don't hurt any cornhole player feelings. The cornhole is now moved to the previous weekend,
yeah.
Right? So it's taken out of the
Yeah, no,
it's
no.
It's taken out of the mix.
So speaking of the cornhole, right? I spoke about this a couple of weeks ago, but I had an idea. I had an idea. I want to run this by you, that we would do videos of different sports, and we would be we would go into a place dressed as hardos of that particular sport. So cornhole. Have you ever seen the cornhole tournament with the guys? Where they have the four wristbands and the thing around their head. And the swagger and everything else.
Kind of like Zoolander. Or was it Zoolander?
Dodgeball.
The Dodgeball.
Yeah. Same type of thing. Yeah. So we'd film a thing, and we would go, and we'd act like we're ringers and go in and get demolished, and we'd film the whole thing. We'd talk smack to these, like, real cornhole players and film it. And then I was thinking we would go down. I was thinking that we would do the same thing with, like, we'd go down to the bocce court down on the boulevard and like be a bunch of old like grandpas there. Old,
playing
and
the
and
Masters.
Go over there like get in their face. Let's go. You want to go? You want to
throw
down?
Man.
Bocce, throw
let's
down
go,
some
man.
Bocce. And we just film it.
And I it pity just, the fool.
Wouldn't that be, a,
that
so
be funny.
Funny?
We could play in the, like the Masters at Augusta. And like
they would not
shoot 300
through the gates at Augusta National.
Like, because we're Italian?
There's just very strict security.
They have.
There.
3 years ago they let me in.
Huh?
3 years ago they let me in.
Yeah, but you had credentials, I'm sure.
No, we're going to have credentials.
Oh, okay.
Who's captain of his golf team at Bishop Fenwick High School? You didn't
I'm
know
so
that?
Impressed.
All the women were all over
so
me.
Impressed.
Speaking of Bishop Fenwick, great event.
Thanks
yesterday.
To Russ Thieves.
Russ Thieves.
Rusty,
thank you, Russ,
that,
man.
That was yesterday.
Was
yeah,
yesterday.
we had a big, 37 year reunion.
No, it's gonna be 35 next year.
Is it?
So it's 34.
30.
And it
so
wasn't technically a reunion; it was pre-reunion.
Right.
Pre-35.
So we had a lobster bake, right?
Yeah. Oh,
so,
nice.
So, I brought lobsters. I brought 40 pounds of lobsters. We only ate 20 pounds of them. I brought the other 20 pounds back, put them in the tank because.
Even
was,
though they were dead.
There was enough. No, they weren't dead.
Even though they were cooked. Even though they were cooked. Even though they were eaten.
We'll
the
know.
Shells. I threw the
they
shells back.
The shells.
The yeah, no. But people were, it's very interesting. Oh, I don't want to get myself in trouble.
Yeah, be careful.
Everybody looked great.
Yeah.
That's all I said.
Did some people look greater than others?
The men looked better than the women.
That's not true.
No.
That's
what Joe was going to say.
I thought the women looked better because they can color their hair and they don't lose their hair.
No.
It was easier to recognize.
There were a lot of
them.
Overweight men there, let's put it that way, including myself.
Joe's
shaking. He wants to say something so bad.
Like you had a wonderful time.
We had an awesome time. It was hilarious. We laughed the whole time.
Next week, we want one of a couple of the women who were there, like a Paige Pickering or Kelly Grennan, Kelly McCarthy, to call in to be part of this podcast so we can debate.
Yeah, we try to get Paige on.
We try to get Paige on.
Let me
today.
See if Paige responded.
But we would
him.
Like their input on their observations of the men.
Yeah. Or how about they just why don't you invite them to the podcast?
We could do that. Yeah, that would
be
fun.
I mean,
that
would be fun.
See, the most outspoken one was, she lived in Marblehead, though, and she would be the one that would give the real dirt.
She would give the real dirt, exactly.
And she lives in Marblehead?
Well,
yeah.
Kelly
oh,
would give the real dirt, too.
Who?
Kelly Grennan, Kelly McCarthy.
Yeah,
she would give
Kelly
the real
Grennan
dirt.
Would give the real dirt. Yeah, no, it was...
The funny thing about yesterday was, it was set up as a pool party, and a number of us had our bathing suits on, and only one guy went in the water. None of the ladies went in the water. We were all afraid to take off our shirts.
You know, I think happened. You know how there was so many girls wearing jean shorts.
Yeah,
I think that they all had bathing suits underneath.
Oh, they did. Charlene had her bathing suit.
That's what it was.
On.
I couldn't figure it out. I'm like, why are these
Everyone was afraid to get
like it's kind of an odd thing. You think you dress like a little preppy, or, you know what I mean, like some classy, you know? But they're wearing like jean shorts, and I'm like. And then I thought about this one. I'm like, those girls all had bathing suits on.
I had my bathing suit.
And they were just like, that's what they would wear to the beach, to, you know what I mean? Like, as, instead of a cover up or something.
You know what? I bet if you did the 35th at night. You know what I mean? If you did it like not broad daylight. You know what I mean?
Yeah, in the dark.
In the dark.
Yeah.
And took away everyone's eyeglasses.
Well, if a few more people, you know, all it takes is if a few more people went in the pool, it would have started a thing. But who you calling?
I'm calling Russ. See if we can get him to comment.
Oh, this would be interesting, yeah, if you can get him to comment.
Yeah,
he's coaching right now, so.
Oh, yeah, he's in a. It's too bad that we couldn't get him on. Mike Codair bailed out, by the way.
Yeah.
Mike Codair was in our class.
Yeah, how come
he didn't come? His priorities are all.
Yeah,
all
he was busy. He had other things.
Hi, this is Russ.
He had more important things to do.
Yeah, very disappointed. Everybody was very disappointed that Mike wasn't there. Very disappointed.
All the women were disappointed, Mike. Mike was a stud. I think he was afraid of the competition that was there.
Dave Cattaro?
Yeah, the guy. Dave Cattaro, Joe Shimitaro.
Quinna.
I mean, those were all the studs in high school, and I know Mike knew that they were coming.
Are they still single?
There's a couple single people.
Some are divorced.
Okay.
Single.
Most of us, I think, had all been married. One point or another.
Bonnie McDougal hadn't.
Oh, that's right. My bad. Yeah, McDougal was probably one of the few. Quinna hasn't been married yet.
So Quinna says he's going to come down here, and he works on diesel engines, and he might get work on someone's boat. I gave him your address if you needed a place to crash. Your wife was very happy.
No, we gave him Codea's address. We gave him Codea's address. Rosecliff. Like, it's very popular in Gloucester.
Susan, you went to the Rusty Can.
I did.
After you said, where's good
despite
barbecue?
Despite the fact that you had recommended it, we had to take a little trip to Newburyport to do something and got a bit peckish, the Brits say, around lunchtime.
Peckish?
Means hungry in England. Joey's going to England soon, so I got to start teaching
prepping.
You got to be careful using that word.
No, I'm not worried about it at all.
No?
So coming home, we're looking around. We see the sign in Byfield where we... never been and never really heard of the place.
Right.
I said, oh, the Rusty Can. Joey has
you were peckish
talked about
and Byfield.
This. And my son said, well, maybe we could still try it. So, okay, off we go. It's right near the highway. We went in, and Asher and I have this, you know, idea that Yankees don't usually turn out barbecue the way we're used to having it.
I think that's fair.
With some healthy skepticism. We were blown away. That stuff is delicious. Asher had some brisket, which was wonderful.
Yeah.
I had the pastrami, which is not like traditional pastrami. Right. My friend Ken Bishop, my best neighbor ever, who's an amazing cook, cures and smokes his own pastrami.
Oh.
It'll bring tears to your eyes. It's so delicious.
We need some of that.
This pastrami was almost as good as Ken Bishop's, but this guy cuts it thinner. Thicker. There's no fat on it. Either he renders it or he cuts it off. I don't know what he does. And slices it kind of like the thickness of brisket.
Yeah.
Melts it on a sandwich with some Swiss cheese and some Russian
dressing. You're killing me.
It's amazing.
Mouth-wateringly delicious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The people are friendly. It's packed. You have to wait. We thoroughly enjoyed our visit there.
And it's like Ground Round. They give you peanuts and you can throw the shells on the ground.
It's not anything like Ground Round in any other
way.
No,
from a peanut standpoint.
I didn't even see a peanut the whole time.
Yeah, the bar. You sit at the bar. I was putting a pile of shells on the bar and the bartender says, you can just put those on the floor. I'm like, yes, I love this place.
It's great.
Okay, well, I like it because the food is great.
Oh, I like it because the food's great too.
We were very pleased.
So if you're peckish in Byfield, make sure you stop by.
Yep. Rusty Can.
Rusty Can.
The meat falls off the bone.
So convenient. Plenty of parking.
Yeah, plenty of parking.
A great place.
Okay, so you know how you said where the meat falls off the bone?
Yeah. Tony Flamamos.
Tony Flamamos in Chelsea. They say, in barbecue purists will say that when you're doing your ribs, if the meat falls off the bone, it's overdone.
Really?
It's supposed to have a little pull.
Wow.
And it should pull off on its own, but it should be easy for you to pull it off.
There should be a little pull when you bite it, like, and they say if it falls right apart, you overcooked it. Like, Craig will tell you.
We should take a judge field trip there, Tony Floramos.
I've never been. Tommy Floramos?
Oh.
Or is it Tony Floramos? I think it's Tony.
My sister's daughter, my niece, is dating a guy whose dad owns Tony Floramos.
Where that was 15 years ago was kind of like, there really was nothing around it.
Exactly.
And now, just like every place else in Boston, like South Boston, they're putting hotels
across the street.
And also, medical centers.
Yeah, across the street are the condos.
Yeah.
I think Ralph's son owned one of those.
Oh, really?
On the left-hand side, as before you go over the bridge.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I think he owned there before he bought his house.
Wow.
Yeah.
Chris has hummingbirds at his house.
Well, that's so exciting.
I don't have any hummingbirds in my house, but he has hummingbirds.
We know why.
Do you know what they're what were they on? What were they doing?
Red stuff.
Red. But you know what was interesting? I was walking my dog and I saw two hummingbirds like chasing each other.
Yeah, zipping around.
Yeah, it was so
cool.
They're
very territorial.
Really?
Yeah.
So they weren't trying to mate. They were almost trying to chase the other one away.
I think they only have one brood up when they're up here. So
brood?
Only one.
They only have one session?
One litter. One group of nestlings. So.
Well, you didn't know what a brood was, so we had to.
A brood is.
They only do that once.
I don't know if they
kind of like humans. Kind of like humans.
I think you're married.
I've done it three times.
The period of time here is relatively brief, so I think they only have one. But the males are very. Did you notice that the hummingbirds have flashes of red on their neck?
Oh, they were flying too quick.
Yeah.
I try to catch one. My dog.
What would that mean?
If they have the flash of red, if they have the red gorget, it's called a gorget.
Yeah,
that's a male.
Oh.
And the females don't have that. But the males are more territorial. So if you
turkeys are very territorial.
If you saw two males zooming around, they could be fighting for territory.
If I saw two males mating, that would be interesting.
Yeah, that would
two
be.
Two male.
You probably would never see a hummingbird mate because it's hard enough to see a piping clover. Maybe.
Do they do it in the air?
I'm not sure, but it probably takes like a split second.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Do they just rub the cloaca on each other?
Kind of like Joe.
I'm sure they do cloaca to cloaca, but you're looking at a very mini thing happening.
They rub cloacas.
So I have a trivia question for you. Why do seagulls have the red part on the bottom of their beaks?
So that is, I believe that's...
I know the answer.
Right. Is that a herring gull? Because not all seagulls have that little red spot.
No. I think it might... I don't know if it's male or female thing, but the only reason I know is because I helped my daughter do a book report on seagulls. And it's supposedly for the babies... They look up to the beak, and that's where they know the food is coming from, is the red part of the beak.
So not all...
Look at me.
Not all seagulls.
I learned something from the book report.
Yeah, what grade is she in?
Well, this was maybe 3 or 4 years ago.
Okay.
That's the one thing I learned.
That was like middle school, right?
Middle school.
Yeah, great.
Go ahead, Joe.
I think it's awesome.
So do we do the greenhead report?
We kind of did when you said the spray.
Oh, so we talked about that the spray is effective.
Yeah.
Okay, I wanted to make sure we said that if you're being bothered by greenheads, get the off spray. It worked for me anyway.
Well, you know what a bunch of clammers told me? Because they're out there on the marsh all the time.
What is it?
They use Skin So Soft.
That's similar. Avon.
From Avon.
Ding dong!
Yeah. Skin
Avon.
So Soft. So I'm just throwing that out there. That's from clammers.
So remember how I was telling you how my Yeti cup... I can't buy the Yeti ones anymore because they get stolen all the time.
Stolen or
the Yeti thief has been discovered.
Who is it?
You point and I'll whistle.
Oh, time out. No, you know who stole it.
Did you do that to a friend?
No. You know the story. It's my wife.
She was trying to throw us off the scent.
I'm not going to say anything bad about your wife. I like her.
She was trying to throw us off the scent.
Yeah.
So
she said, "No, no, the black one that was in the bag had said Vespa on it.
Which
said
is
Vespa,
a,
on
which
it.
Is a country club, which I got for a gift when I played in the tournament."
So
I was going crazy. Yeah. Kate was going to buy me a new one. No, no, it's the black one that holds the beer. Kate was going to buy me a new one. I says, "Let's just wait one more week to see if it shows up.
See if McCarthy turns it up."
And is that it right there?
No, no, no. This is just a no-name brand.
We're on
so
Checkerbooks wondering where it is.
Thank God I bought a little thing of propane at the store yesterday, and I put it in my closet where the other propane is. It's just those camping propane, little propane tanks.
Yeah, I know
tanks.
Them well.
And I see all our Yetis, because we got about six of them. And I had been asking my wife, I'm like, "Joe thinks that he left his Yeti on our boat. Have you seen it?" And she's like, nope, the ones we got, blah, blah, blah. And Joe said it has barbecue it sticker
Craig
on it.
Put a sticker on the back of it, barbecue.
Right. And she's like, "Nope, didn't see anything." So when I opened the closet, I said, "You know what, let me just go through these." And what do you know? There was a black one that didn't have Vespa on it.
And Yeti thief.
Yeah, and it had a barbecue it sticker
and
on it.
Well, the barbecue, she put it through
she tried
the dishwasher.
She tried to take the sticker off.
Or one could claim that she tried to scrape the sticker.
Tell her to use Goo Gone next time.
That's good shit. But tell him about the cup.
He upgraded the cup
for him. I upgraded it for him.
He die cut the GMG sticker and he put it perfectly on there. So now I have my own.
Oh, and we're not using it today.
Well, it's really a beer can. It would be a problem.
Good thing we're not.
It would be a problem because it's one that you put a can in and you screw the top on and it keeps your beer really cold.
Okay. Yeah.
So if I was drinking a beer right now at 9:58 a.m., that would be a problem.
That would be good.
Well, we've done it before.
But these cups, I've spoken about before. They you could put your a cold beer in it, screw the top on, and leave it in the hot sun, come back 20 minutes later, it would still the beer and take a sip out of it, the beer would still be ice cold.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm. It's really amazing. Good. It's really good.
Don't you wish you had thought of some of these things?
Susan, the Winslow Homer
exhibit's opening on the 3rd, which I guess is next Saturday. Mm-hmm.
The Cape Ann Museum?
At the Cape Ann Museum. Winslow Homer briefly was a 19th century American artist.
Right.
Probably one of the most famous ones.
Yep.
And they're doing an exhibit at the museum called Homer at the Beach, A Marine Painter's Journey, 1869 to 1880. Winslow Homer was an artist who started out as an illustrator.
Yep.
For magazines, primarily like Harper's Weekly, doing lithographs. And he was almost like a photojournalist, but with lithographs. Drawings of the U.S. Civil War, or as we call it in Atlanta, my other home, the War of Northern Aggression. So he started out as an illustrator, and he moved on to painting, and he did a lot of work painting on the East Coast from New Jersey to Maine, my understanding, and he spent a few summers in Gloucester.
Really?
One in the 1870s, he was back in 1880, and lived with the lightkeeper on 10 Pound Island.
Oh, wow.
Where he did a bunch of paintings. But this exhibit is very special because there are going to be about 50 original works by Homer that the Cape Ann Museum, which is a wonderful museum, has collected out of 40 private and public collections. And a lot of these works are hanging together.
Yeah.
For the first time.
That's great.
There's a series of lectures through the summer and fall that go along with this exhibit. There's a special sale on the Ardell, like a few weeks from now, where they're going to go to some of the scenes and tell stories about Homer. Homer painted on Rocky Neck quite a bit.
Wonderful.
So I'm very excited about going to see it.
Well,
and I know I'll probably run into all the Bishop Fenwick guys there.
What was interesting to me is you spoke.
They have a bar? Do they have a bar at the museum?
No.
You know, I think there's a drunk tank right around the corner. So we'll just pick you up there.
So you said that how many different places did they get the works from?
40 different collections.
Which is very interesting to me. And then I was thinking about it. I was like, well, all these, like even Cape Ann Museum has some incredible works, right?
Unbelievable.
So it must be like a kind of a, they must work in conjunction, like they trade, right? Like, oh, you can borrow a couple of my pieces.
Collectors just do this, they switch around back and forth.
Right, and they say, oh,
that's
this is the
common.
Week we'd like to have everybody's of this particular artist.
I think they just started
like Hopper,
way ahead of time contacting, you
right,
know, they know
yeah,
we're all, he's such an important American artist,
right,
yeah,
that they know where all his stuff is pretty much at the, you know, Metropolitan Museum of Art, at the National Gallery, and they start, you
like
know,
a year or two ahead of time,
ringing up these people.
Yeah.
I don't know how long it takes, but it's a huge project.
Yeah.
And you got to pack them up and insure them and get them here. And
special art, only special truckers are allowed to.
Well, not just
art,
that, the security,
yeah,
after the Isabella Stewart Gardner,
oh, that
heist, they have to be so careful.
Oh, yeah. Must be.
I wish you'd solve that, by the way, Joey.
I'd like to get the money for the solving
it.
Is it that piece of art?
Recently, you know.
Kim,
is it that piece of art hanging right there?
Yeah, I think that's one of them.
Joe, that's
one,
the one they're
looking
for.
That might be the one.
Anyway, I'm very excited about this exhibit, and it starts next weekend. And I don't know how crowded it will be, but his stuff is amazing.
Kim has a free program for children at Sawyer Free Library August 21st. It's a Monarch.
At
10 a.m.
Yep.
It's a Monarch program.
Yep. So it goes along with Cape Ann Reads for the little children's book that I wrote about the monarchs. And so it starts at 10 a.m. And I'm sure I'm going to have caterpillars and butterflies for everybody too.
Oh, so you're going to bring the little the chrysalis and stuff?
The chrysalises and the caterpillars and the tanks. And
should people bring their own tanks? What would be good for them to bring the stuff back with them?
I'm not going to be giving.
Oh.
I'm not going to have enough.
No,
I'm not going to have enough.
No. You get a butterfly.
No,
marshmallow. You get a butterfly.
Yeah.
You get a butterfly.
Well, right now I have 32 Cecropia moth caterpillars, and those are amazing. I haven't posted any pictures of them, but eventually they'll be about this big. They're a beautiful, bright green with red, yellow, and blue,
whoa,
spiky polka dots all over them.
Mm.
So they're wonderful.
Oh.
Yeah, they're. And then I'll bring those as well as any monarch activity that I have.
You have a couple other topics we're going to talk about. The video of the doe on the beach and the game-changing plover story.
Yes, the video of the doe on the beach is, I'll post that tonight or tomorrow night. It was spectacular to be so close while the doe was, you know, essentially just coming right towards me and checking me out. So, and you had two fawns in your yard, right?
I did. Yeah, I didn't see him, but my dog was going nuts from our bedroom window. So my wife looked out, and there were two ferns.
Two ferns.
but no, it was great to see because we hadn't seen them in a while.
Yeah, it must be beautiful
had,
to see.
Oh, it is, with the river in the background.
Yeah, oh my
it's
gosh.
Like, it's just crazy.
I want to come and set a camera up over
there. You
there
you go, yeah, GoPro.
Yeah, so.
As long as you don't turn it into our bedroom.
Okay, I won't, I promise. So.
Over some short film.
Some shorts.
Shortcuts.
Some horror movies.
Yeah, some horror movies and some short subjects, I believe they call them.
Short documentaries.
That's
a good one.
Docu-comedies.
So, also, I have big news to share about. This is really huge. So, I have been documenting a piping plover family, not in Gloucester, a number of piping plover families, because I need more footage other than just what we have for the documentary that I'm working on about our piping plovers. And so this one family, I started, I documented their, I documented them mating, then their nesting, they laid four eggs, and they very successfully fledged four chicks. Well, while their chicks were, while the fledglings were running around, they started mating again. And they laid another nest of eggs, which is, there's no documentation of that happening in Massachusetts prior to this. Like actual.
You need to write a scholarly article and
yeah, so
publish,
it's
yeah,
very, very extraordinary. And so those chicks just hatched on Wednesday morning.
Oh.
And because with all the biologists that I'm working with, they were like, well, you know, who knows what's going to happen to the eggs? They might not be viable. Well, all three babies hatched, so they fledged four. And then now it looks like they're going to have three successful babies, and which is really unusual because the average piping plover family fledges 1.2 chicks
right,
per year. So this will be seven. If all three of these babies make it, it will be
define
seven.
Successful.
So
Is there a textbook definition of success?
Yes.
For a plover child?
So it's 1.2 is what the average is now.
Right.
And we, am I sitting in that?
No.
Yeah, but like at what age are they deemed to be successful?
Oh, 35 days.
35 days, that's the success.
That's what U.S. Fish and Wildlife calls success.
Doesn't matter like how smart they are.
No,
or,
because
okay.
So they can, most of them can fly short distances at 25 days.
Right.
So the state likes to call it fledged at 25 days.
Right.
But U.S. Fish and Wildlife calls it 30 to 35 days because
okay.
some are a little slower developmentally, but by 35 days that covers all of them. So
okay.
They would be slower.
So if a hawk grabbed one on the 36th day, it still would be.
It would still be called.
Been successful.
It would be successful. If it grabbed it on its 34th day, not successful.
Not successful.
Not successful.
What a difference a day makes.
So anyway, so it's really extraordinary, and it's also a game changer in the way people manage the beaches as well, because if you prematurely dismantle the nesting area because you think, oh, you know, they've had one successful brood, now it's time to, you know, close up shop, you really shouldn't do that because there's the potential that they can re-nest. And I think it's probably happened at other beaches, but because I'm so closely following this one. I know exactly, it's the exact same parents. It's not like, well, somebody suggested, well, we think it might be a different mother. And I'm like, no, I have photographic evidence that it's the same mother both times. So anyway, so it was beautiful to watch them hatching. On Wednesday, two hatched early in the morning, and then the last one hatched late in the day. And it was all filmed and documented.
Now,
so
the one that hatches last, is that the one who is going to be slower developmentally?
Yes, yeah. Well, just it usually happens that at least for the first week, you can see which one hatched. Sometimes they don't hatch for another day. This one, fortunately, was only 12 hours later. But
are they just not as industrious by nature as the
well,
other chicks?
Well, the first, they want to, they're always like a day or two behind the other ones. You can tell, like the two that were hatched first, they're zooming around more. The smaller one wants to cuddle a little bit more, and you can't.
Oh, so the last one to hatch is usually the smallest.
Yeah,
runs of the litter.
Not usually smaller necessarily, just a little bit behind, just a day behind, because the development happens so quickly over a 30-day period that you can tell one day makes a difference.
Wow.
So one day really makes a difference. So.
Or maybe the nature of that chick is why they hatched a day later.
No, what happens is, so because these are precocial birds and they hatch ready, basically within hours they're ready to feed themselves.
Right.
So the female will lay one egg and then not lay another egg for another day or two, and not lay another egg for another day or two.
I gotcha.
Over a week period, she's laying the eggs, but then the male and female don't start sitting on the nest until all three or four eggs have been laid. So one egg could have been laid for conceivably 6 days after the first egg was laid, but they don't want to sit on them until they're all there. But usually that is probably the one that hatches a little bit later too. So. Yeah, it's really interesting.
That's good stuff.
So I saw, like, you can't really see the babies hatching because they're under the parent, but every now and then.
Oh, while they're hatching?
While they're hatching. So
they don't get smothered?
No, they scoop out a little, you know, they scoop out a little
depression.
Like a little depression,
bunker?
A tiny little depression in
bird
the sand.
Bunkers?
And the parent is over it, kind of fluffing out their feathers.
I see.
So
they're
like
the roof of the bunker.
Yeah, they're like the roof of the bunker. Very good. And then, so what happens, though, is as one is hatching, the parents are sort of, the whatever parent it happens to be that is brooding the chicks when they start hatching, will start removing the eggshells immediately to get them away from so no predators will notice that there's babies there. So say like in the morning one, it was the mama sitting on the nest while they were hatching, and she would immediately carry off an egg, a shell, as soon as the chick.
Are the shells
out of
in
it.
Tiny little pieces or big pieces?
Big pieces. So pretty big, there's some tiny but big pieces. So she, like, I have great footage of her, like, running off of the
eggshell.
She's
hiding the evidence.
She was bringing down to the shore. You know where she put it? Was with a whole bunch of little rocks where it looked like it was another.
Camouflaged, yeah.
It was camouflaged. So when she jumps up like that, I can photograph and film what's happening underneath. So I have different stages. Like,
right.
you see an egg with a crack in it. Then you see an egg. Then you see an egg with a chick half out of it. And then they're all wet and smushy when they first emerge. It takes a couple of hours for
them
to dry.
That's what we're talking about, Joe.
Guess what?
Your favorite.
Flowers?
Yeah.
Oh, we brought that up.
Yeah.
It's very cool.
You just missed
the game
something.
Changer.
Very
the
game
changer.
The
game
breaking
changer.
News.
Did we talk about the sidewalk bazaar yet?
No. That's August 1st, 2nd, and 3rd.
Which is?
Next weekend. Thursday, Friday.
Good
Saturday.
Values.
What are you going to buy there,
yeah.
Joe?
I'm gonna tell. Okay. Ashton. Okay. Let's go through. Okay, we have two more topics, so this will be one of them. What is your go-to? Do you have go-to sidewalk bazaar stores that you hone in on that particular weekend?
The one
I
do.
Is
no
do.
Longer there. They sold the most amazing jewelry cleaner, liquid in a jar, to wash your jewelry in.
Yeah,
and
cool.
They were there for a couple of years and never showed up again, and I missed them.
Oh, it was a vendor
that
wasn't a store. Okay.
Like, yeah, table.
But they're not there. Not, no
never
particular
seen them
store.
Again.
No other. There's no store go to. I have a go. My go to store is Nelson's. Nelson's always has end of season, ridiculous sales on shorts, like technical jerseys, like all different kind of stuff.
Really?
Like they blow out things. What?
Do you have to go early to get that?
I don't know. I mean, I'm always. I'll probably go Saturday morning, like first thing. I'll probably go.
Oh, Friday. It starts Friday. Though.
It starts Friday.
Yeah,
no,
but I'll be working.
Go Saturday.
I think is it Friday?
Yeah, it's Friday.
August 1st, so...
And you can't drive down Main
Thursday,
Street,
Friday,
don't forget.
Thursday, Friday,
Thursday,
Saturday, according
Thursday.
To this, yeah.
Yeah, Thursday, Friday,
on Thursday.
Saturday.
Yeah.
Thursday. Yeah.
So whatever day I can get there, I'm definitely going to go, but I hone in on Nelson's. Chris,
that's
you
good.
Probably... Chris, I turned Chris on to Nelson's.
Yeah, that's good that you go to the local one, because, you know, there's a competition, too, from other, you know... There's other vendors from out of town.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's really nice.
Yeah.
That,
well, there's a lot of cool. I don't really shop for women's things, but we have. I mean, there's a lot of great vendors.
Yeah.
You sure?
Yeah. So here's the okay. Last question. I don't know if you guys are gonna be into this. Chris may be into this, but maybe you'll be into this. I don't think. Maybe. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. If you have,
no one's gonna be into it.
Here's the question. Here's the question. It's kind of a.
And this is the end.
Then this will be we're going to end on this, and I'm going to start with Kim. I'm going to go reverse order.
Uh-oh.
If you had to give up one food for the rest of your life, tacos, pizza, burgers, or fries, what would it be?
Tacos, burgers, pizza. I would be fries.
Fries. You could give up fries.
If I had to.
Out of all those. Those are your least favorite out of all those.
Right. I mean, I could never give up pizza. I could never give up burgers. No.
Tacos?
Tacos.
How about you?
We love
you?
Tacos.
Absolutely 100% French fries. I almost never eat them.
Interesting.
I had delicious ones at the Time Out Market in Boston, though.
Oh, I know. Next week, we'll talk about that next week.
Umami salt and some sort of maple. They were delicious.
We're
going
to talk about that. We need to do a field trip there.
You're driving.
Okay.
Sex.
Mike, you can drive my car, though.
Sex?
Yeah.
Before you would give up any of those?
Chris, just get back.
Taco. Taco.
Tacos?
Joe, we need to up his name.
Sex tacos.
I'm sex. out of those four, tacos would be.
I know, but time out. The fish, the blackened fish tacos we've been eating.
Well, I wasn't invited for those, so I don't know if I could give them
up
or not.
Like,
I'm going to tell you right now, Kate.
Yeah.
We had them twice in 2 days.
Yeah.
So Chris brought the haddock. Chris brought the haddock down the wharf, and so I was all set. I had sausages. I had Bianco sausages.
Delicious.
And I'm like. It was kind of a busy day, and I'm like, oh, Chris, come down. I'm going to make sausage sandwiches first. I already sautéed the peppers and onions at the house the night before. I was just going to do the onions and the... So he comes down, he goes, he goes, how about we do black... He goes, I'll bring something. So he comes up, and he's got fucking 10 different ingredients. So I'm looking at it like, black, he wants me to do fish tacos, which means... It's a little.
Well, originally it was baked haddock. We were gonna do baked haddock with breadcrumbs.
Right.
But then when I was at the store, I'm like, that's too blah. So I said, how about some tacos with fish with the haddock?
Delicious.
Which means it's a little bit more involved than throwing a couple of sausages on the grill.
But it was
right?
very simple.
It ended up being much more simple than I thought.
Yeah. So how did you do it? You just
put a rub on them.
We put the blackened.
We
blackened
we put the Paul Prudhomme. It was one of my go-to rubs. Paul Prudhomme.
God rest
blackened
his soul.
Season. Is he dead?
Oh yeah.
I was looking.
He ate too many tacos.
I was looking to tag him on my Twitter feed.
You know, I think I'd advise against it. A friend of mine just passed away last week, and her birthday was like 2 days later.
You got all the notifications.
And about 15 people wished her happy birthday on Facebook.
Oh, well, that's tough.
But it was very simple. So then we did it.
The family.
So you rubbed
So olive oil on the fish.
Right, and then
the blackened seasoning. Yeah. Get the cast iron. We did it on the grill out here. We did it on two mini grills. First, I did it on the large cast iron sportsman grill.
Yeah.
Then down the beach, I brought my little Weber rectangle grill.
Yeah.
And just heated up real good.
Yeah.
And this is something I discovered. So once you blacken the fish, you don't even have to
be. So is it directly on the grate on the grates or
no?
No,
a pan.
On
oh,
the cast
in a pan.
Iron pan.
In a pan. Okay.
Large cast iron pan.
Okay.
So put it flat on there with the oil. So the oil and thing there is, and you get it, so it's cooked through. So it's white all the way through. It's not opaque or whatever.
Right.
Then you take it off and you put it in the thing. What I didn't realize was, and because I'm not really that good of a cook, but you learn all the time, right? Something I learned was I put olive oil in the cast iron and then I put the shells in there. I should have just put them in there dry.
Yeah.
Because they toasted up once after a couple of those, the taco shells went on and they were coming off soggy.
Yeah,
I realized.
The hard shells?
No, they were the kind of
the flour tortillas.
One was
corn tortillas.
Yeah, we did both.
Okay,
but I like the wheat ones.
Yeah, just put it on dry.
Right, dry, and they toasted up just really nicely.
Yeah.
And Kate made.
You can also make your own.
Yeah, that's too involved.
That's
not that hard.
So Kate made this incredible. Like red cabbage slaw. We did onions and she made a crema, yeah, avocado crema, and I made my
that sounds so delicious.
That sriracha mayo is like
love when people make great stuff and then they just tell you about it, don't you, Kim?
The sriracha mayo is the easiest condiment to make, and it's
right.
And it goes on so many burgers.
You gotta watch out for it when you're out at the beach on a hot day, is my advice.
Yeah, that's true.
Be very careful.
Yeah. No, we had a great time though, and.
So you would give that up for French fries?
I would.
Yeah,
because French fries are always an option. What?
You didn't say
your choice.
You said tacos.
Yeah, I said tacos.
Including the fish tacos?
Because I don't eat the fish tacos all the time. We have comments over here, but I'm gonna have to end up the podcast. GlosterCast 350 is in the books, guys. Chris, pay attention. We're out. Everybody have a great day.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
I'll make some fish tacos.
So good.
I'm telling you, they were easy and it was so delicious.
I do a mustard roasted egg that is really delicious.
It sounds so good.
It's all you do, you take creme fraiche,
right.
Dijon and whole grain mustard,
yeah.
Mix it up. You chop up a shallot, you throw in some capers, a little salt and pepper.
Yeah.
And you take the piece of haddock and you put it on a piece of parchment paper or a baking sheet,
oh,
salt and pepper on there.
Nice.
Lop that creme fraiche mustard.